Hey guys, and welcome. This time we are doing a crossover as our second bonus episode. Thomas Herman, who is the host of Geekly Oddcast, who appears a lot on this show, has a very kind of more discussion-based, less silly, well, it's very silly, but less themed often podcast. While we stick to movies and the movie being the narrative driver, they have discussions and panels, and they also have a concurrent sci-fi kind of, well, I mean, it's a role-playing game called Otter Worlds podcast, and they run several games. You can go back and listen to them go through several different campaigns and different style of gameplay. Their big discussion panels is great. It's a podcast feed that has so much different kind of stuff. It's really interesting. Anyway, this past summer, Thomas and I did a discussion on The Muppets, which I figured would be wonderfully appropriate and kind of a nice little bonus. So enjoy.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
This is the Geekly Oddcast, a show of television, gaming, and whatever comes to mind.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Geekly Oddcast. Tonight, we are going to be discussing Puppets and Muppets, or kind of the history of that one, and just kind of our experience in that one. But before I jump into that, I am Thomas Herman, your host, and tonight we are joined by...
Hey, I'm Nick. I'm from the Myopia Defend Your Childhood and Riffer on Cineprov.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course. I've been here before.
Indeed. On a good chunk of the episodes, actually. For which I am ever appreciative.
Yeah, of course.
But so you and I, did I lose?
No, you're good.
Okay.
I accidentally tuned you down too far.
So you and I actually have a great deal of shared history on this one, which is you and I are both love the Muppets, both love Henson, and both love the YouTube series Glove and Boots, yeah. Which has sadly been on hiatus for, about 8 months now?
Yeah, unfortunately, something like that.
But one of the things I do love that, and really this does go down to Henson, is puppets are just like one of the oldest entertainment tricks in the book. Like, I mean, right down to putting socks on your hands or things like that. But they were always very much a youthful medium for entertainment. I mean, I'm even thinking back to Punch and Judy.
Yeah, that was my first point of reference. Yeah, go ahead, please, because that's the best.
And what I was thinking of as I was leading up to this episode is that something Henson did, and it's something I think of when I think about ventriloquists as well, is taking away, I mean, you know, your suspension of disbelief is something you should you walk into most entertainment with, even a comedy show, is to the degree I'm going to be lied to at least a little bit in this next hour.
Sure.
But... you know, when you watch the Muppets, you suspend disbelief so quickly because it's so obvious looking at it. None of those, you know, Kermit is not alive. It's obviously somebody's hand up a Muppet's butt. But in the characterization between Kermit and Fozzie, or Kermit, Fozzie, and an actor, that's just, you know, it washes away to this is a character. And you're just watching for the show, and it just melts away. And that's something, you know, watching a puppet show, you know, before that, you know, some sort of youthful endeavor, it's very easy. Like, you know, this is very much, you know, directed towards a specific audience, whereas the Muppets took that to a whole nother scale, where the Muppets were directed at everyone. Sure. And I think that's, you know, something that, you know, we go forward – to you know, we come around full circle and come back to Glove and Boots, which we will, like, that they managed to continue as well, but something that would not have been possible without the Muppets to predate.
Sure. That was a lot to start with.
Yes, it was. Sorry, I kind of hit a roll.
Yeah, you're fine. So Glove and Boots, for those of you who don't know, I guess we can get into in a minute, but
The Muppets, I don't know, you are alluding to this, your first view with the Muppets. I'm sure mine was Sesame Street.
Yeah, Sesame Street.
That goes without saying, kind of. But
and Muppet Babies.
Yeah, Muppet Babies, which, God, that came out when we were very young. I don't remember it until I was slightly older because it was syndicated and it was running forever and ever and ever and ever. Way past its utility.
That is true. It's the reason why we got another Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
It's amazing how many movies I haven't seen, but I've seen because I've seen like The Simpsons or Muppet Babies or Family Guy that just allude to a movie to the point where you've seen the whole thing.
Wait. So just time out. Are you telling me that as of this moment, you have not seen Attack of the Killer Tomatoes or Return of the Killer Tomatoes?
Oh, no. I mean, I have. I'm talking about things like Fantastic Voyage where they went inside like the computer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or I must have seen Indiana Jones 1,000 times before I actually saw Indiana Jones, because that was just kind of their go-to joke.
You know, it's funny when you think about that, and I know this is a complete tangent, but even to the joke in the most in Civil War, Marvel Civil War, where he goes, remember that really old movie? And it's Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And the movies of our childhood are becoming those movies that people haven't even seen yet, but they've seen them everywhere before they actually see them.
You and I are about the same age, so like that joke works because I was born like 2 years after Return of the Jedi, and I was born in 85. But like, you could do that now with so many movies. In fact, you could do that with the first Spider-Man movie. You know, I mean, Spider-Man Homecoming is not Deadpool, so he doesn't like literally throw out an older doll, but he kind of could have. He almost really could have. But yeah, I mean, I really felt, to your point, the Muppet that I remember kind of first is Kermit, because he used to overlap. He used to be on the old Sesame Street.
He did.
And I mean, Elmo is in my time period, but not really. Like, the toy came out when I was like in elementary school, so I had stopped watching it.
Oh, yeah. Is that, wait, are you referring? No, because I thought Tickle Me Elmo came out a little.
Middle school, probably.
Middle school, yeah.
Yeah, probably. But the character was in existence, but he just didn't sound like Elmo. That's the thing I realize now watching it with my daughter. There's a much more evolution of the characters than we're aware of, because watching the movies, watching Muppets Tonight, which was an abysmal failure that I wish I could find because I thought some of it was interesting.
It's on YouTube, most of it.
Well, but that's just it. Like, other than an episode here or there, I'm interested because we'll get to this, I'm sure, later too. That Sesame Street movie, the Dreamland Murders, what is it called?
Oh, shoot.
I'll look it up. But it's directed by Brian Henson, who did Muppets Tonight, is the son of Jim, and did a bunch of Sesame Street, did a bunch of these other shows that
they
have.
He did Christmas Carol.
And Muppets Treasure Island, maybe?
He did, yeah.
So it's interesting that like there's all this tension now, even though he's Brian Henson.
Yeah, he went off and did, like, I mean, I don't even think he's currently with Henson Studios. I know for a while he was on the sci-fi show about puppetry, like that reality competition show.
Well, and he did some of the other things. Like, I think he did Farscape.
He did do Farscape, and I'm still waiting for that movie, and I'll probably be waiting for another 20 years.
It's called The Happy Time Murders.
Okay, that's right.
And I mean, the only reason I bring that up is because it's the kind of opposite extreme. Like, Avenue Q was a parody. This is kind of supposed to be in that world, sort of.
Oh, wait, is that the movie that's coming out soon?
Yeah, it's the one that's advertised
with
everywhere.
Melissa McCarthy. And yep. Yeah, okay.
So to that end, I'm kind of interested in that.
Okay, so then you've got, additionally on top of that, because you've got Avenue Q, pure parody. I remember catching clips of it at Piedmont Park because they were doing it for free. You could just go out and watch, which was entertaining.
Sure.
But then you had like Crank Yankers, which was a big meh for the, you know, puppetry role. But I mean, there's so much that's been done. I mean, heck, we, you know, you and I both live in Atlanta, and we've got the Center for Puppetry Arts just downtown.
Sure. And I mean, to my interest in this, the Muppets are interesting. The puppets are interesting because they are individuals who are characters, right? Like that's the thing. The physical comedy is where I think they're unique. You know, I'll reference another podcast because it's more appropriate on this one than my other podcast. But We Hate Movies, there's a the host Andrew Jupin talks about how he loves a good puppet throwing. You know, like there's something so incredible about like when you throw Kermit through a plate glass window or Fozzie off a stage like you do in like the first Muppet movie, for example, that when it becomes a human falling out of an airplane becomes so cartoonish. But when it's them, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my God,
because they go limp in a way that they go limp anyway. And you're just like, oh, no, this is somehow much more violent.
Yes. Well, I know. And I think that's something wonderful that that Henson did for the medium is engendering it with, you know, a character that you, a believable character, you know, Kermit has a, other than the most recent Muppet Show, has a specific character style to him, you know, that you just follow along with, and Miss Piggy as well. And so all of them, they feel real. So when one goes flying through a window, even though they get a limp ragdoll, like, you know, a classic action dummy, it feels, you know, you're like, oh, my God, did they just, you know, because, you know, there's no stunt double for Kermit the Frog.
No. Well, and I guess here's a question I have for you. I guess we'll announce this here because what we're not doing this season, if you guys have been listening, it's not giving hints to the movies, but we're giving a category. And your category in December is going to be the Muppets, which is one of the reasons why we thought of doing this month.
Exactly.
And this is going to almost be your thesis statement for the website, like why do the Muppets?
Exactly.
But there's kind of three eras of the Muppet as movies, right? You have the first era where they're very classic Hollywood, it's very whatever. The second one is after Jim has died, and then you have this kind of almost remake era. They do Muppet Treasure Island, which we've done on the podcast, Muppet Wizard of Oz, Muppets in Space, which is almost like a Three Stooges movie.
That's true.
And then you have the era started by the guy from How I Met Your Mother with the Muppets.
Oh, yeah. No, that's correct.
Followed by Muppets Most Wanted, which was an attempt to go back to form, but they really couldn't get there. The Muppets is a weird property because now all of Hollywood, I mean, like, just look at who are the guests, like the cameo roles from that Muppets Most Wanted, which is a completely forgettable movie, but it's Tina Fey, it's John Hamm, it's because everyone grew up watching the Muppets.
It's Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
Well, no, and I think it's something that that part at least harkens back to the original Muppet Show, which is never have more actors signed up to be upstaged by a pig in the history of Hollywood.
I mean, that first one, they stumble across everyone. Steve Martin is the one who's selling them cheap wine.
I mean, they run into, classic Hollywood. I'm going to have to look it up. But where he's like, you know, where every time he walks through it, it happens more than once. It's like, you know, oh, tough crowd. It's like, I own this bar.
Yeah.
And it's like, or like, I mean, and the gags that run through it, it's making fun of like the classic, you know, I was thinking about this. I was, watching something the other night, and it had my wife, and it had Shirley MacLaine in it, and I'm like, oh, she's famous. I know her name, and I'm like, what the hell has she been in? And I'm just looking at this like, she's been in so many throwaway movies. She's classic Hollywood, but all of these are just exceptionally throwaway movies. And I feel like that's really what, like, you know, the Muppet movie, Muppets Take Manhattan, The Great Muppet Caper are like, they're kind of this harken back to these cliched movies that they're making fun of. And
well, no, I mean, like my wife had never seen National Lampoon Vacation, like the first one, the road trip one. And like the Aunt Edna played by Imogene Coca, it's the same thing. Like she's been in 1,000 movies. You just would never know it. Like who could care? It has a very satisfying end of the movie where he's punching the hell out of a moose, but whatever. but I mean, like, that's the other thing that I guess we'll get to here, but the Muppets are interesting because in some ways they haven't changed at all, and in other ways they've changed substantially. They've always been extraordinarily self-aware. They look into the camera in a way that at the time was weird, and now everyone does, and they're still the best at it somehow.
Mug for a joke better than Leno ever could.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. but on top of that, Fozzie is the worst Borscht Belt comedian ever, which makes him the best Borscht Belt comedian ever. Like,
waka, waka, waka.
And he comes out full Steve Martin when you first meet him in the Muppet movie with the rubber chicken with the arrow through his head, just it's awful. It's the best. It's the best and the worst because you realize no one should do it, and it works for one guy, and he's referencing the fact that it works for a guy who's in the movie later.
I mean, no. What I love is he tells the worst, like one of the worst jokes to try and get off, saying, you know, drinks on the house, and everyone runs up to the top of the bar, and you're just like, oh my God,
it worked.
It worked.
That's the thing. Like, it works in some of these worlds, and that's the crazy thing.
Oh yeah. One of the things that especially the original did is almost harkening back to is bringing almost the Looney Tunes. It's bringing the Looney Tunes into the real world before Who Framed Roger Rabbit like really managed to bring cartoons into a cinema.
Right.
And but doing it in such a cheesy way. But managing to get everybody on board. And I think that's something Henson gets to take, full credit for, is managing to, make these connections and getting everyone, even Mel Brooks, to sign on and be absolutely ridiculous.
And, to get to this, right, what we're trying to figure out, at least what I'm trying to figure out, is – A, why they don't work anymore, because that show failed, and maybe it's just that they went too far with it.
I think they did. I think if they had tried to go back and redo another sketch comedy show, trying to do the Muppet Show again.
Yeah.
I think they'd have had a better shot at it. I think trying to make the Muppets like fully actualized outside of a movie is too much.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe they just went too far. I think they thought Muppets Tonight failed. And that's exactly what the original show was. It was essentially set as a show and then backstage of a show.
Except they tried to bring in a new host instead of leaving Kermit as the host.
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it too. Maybe that Kermit is just... he's strung out. That can get us too. And that can get us to Glove and Boots thinking they're pod people. But... there is something infinitely charming about them, and maybe that's. I think the Muppets is a huge success. The one that came out five years ago.
Yeah, yeah, the Muppets. With Jason Segel, yeah,
and because there's something about it that is reminiscent of the first movie, which is that they're getting the gang together. But there's something so tragic about it, so like heartbreaking. Well,
they managed to, I think that one managed to put its finger on the pulse of nostalgia quite well, and. It balanced the Muppets out. Like, so Kermit, the new Muppet, I can't remember his name right now.
Steve. I'll figure it out.
We're like the Jason Segel's brother and Amy Adams and Jason Segel were really the main characters of that movie. And the Muppets were trying to put the gang back together it was almost Marx Brothers in how like the Marx Brothers are not the main characters of a Marx Brothers movie.
Sure.
They're there. They're running through it. They're where your prime focus is. But the actual story is something else.
And the thing was, you're right. It was Jason and Walter trying to get to get the Muppets back together. But I think something that worked very well with it was directed by a guy named James Bobbin. Who did a lot of Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, because it just looks...
Because the guy who did Flight of the Conchords wrote the music, and it was wonderful.
Well, and the thing that show always did, too, was that it sat in a bad joke. It just... It made the audience sit in a bad joke, and so when Fozzie was... Was he in charge of a cover band for the Muppets?
At a casino in Reno?
Called the Mopeds or whatever? And, like... They were doing a knockoff of Rainbow Connection about like how about the lunch special or something. And it was a bad parody, but the kind of parody that a local commercial would do. And then they just sat in the joke. And then his green room was outside in an alley, and then it started raining. And then his umbrella had a hole in it, and it just sat.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of where the Muppets are at their best, and so there's a book by Carol Spiney, the guy who was Big Bird, called The Wisdom of Big Bird. And it's a little biography. It's very short. It's in like little vignettes. And he talked about like the love of these Muppets as characters, that they weren't just puppets. That he was Big Bird and he was Oscar. And for those of you who don't know, Big Bird as a character is a marvel. It's like a puppet that has all these internal things that make it look like it's moving when there's just a guy with an arm above his head and one hand in one of the arms making this thing work. through a very hot suit.
So I will toss this one in there as for a brief period and on occasion. My brother and I will crack out the puppets that we have. And I will tell you, from filming and sitting there, your arm above your head for a couple hours of filming, I give due credit to the people that do this for a living, because my God, it is unpleasant after a while. Like, I can't imagine what it was like to film Fraggle Rock.
Oh, yeah.
It's a full, like, not just, you know, like, oh, occasional bits that you need to add on, but like, no, we've got a full, you know, I can't even imagine.
Sure.
Just getting through that, because your arm starts cramping. It's unpleasant. You're sweating. It's hot. I actually got to meet at Dragon Con back in 2013 a couple of the Fraggle puppeteers who worked with Henson, and I actually talked to him about it. I can't even imagine how you even train yourself for that. It's impressive going. I mean, you know, I'd be Big Bird takes it to a whole nother level, because not only is your hand up in the air, you're sweating like a pig because you're inside this super hot suit that probably doesn't smell very well.
Well, and it's one of these things too. Like, you can find behind the scenes stuff for like Sesame Street or, you know, or to a lesser extent, Mr. Rogers. I love Mr. Rogers, but those are literally the simplest puppets ever. And you can see them just kind of behind a scene. But like, on one hand, on Sesame Street, you see the people, they're kind of like on these, like, those little wheelie, like, gym things you, like, from elementary school, where they have wheels, they're flat, you lie on your back, and you have your arms up, and sometimes they have more than one puppet, because sometimes they're the voice, sometimes they're not, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Then you have the kids and the other actors around them. Big Bird is a whole thing, just like Snuffy's actually two guys, and they're working together, and there's pulleys to make the nose move separately from the eyes, and the guy in the back is helping walk, and it's, you realize that there's a world here. And if, you know, there are these stories of like early filming of Sesame Street that Spiny tells, or Spinny, I guess, where some of the puppeteers were just like, they had to film essentially three episodes in a week, because there were other things to do, and then there's mixing and there's sound, and they were at the time coming out with 26 episodes a year. And so with that in mind, like, there were puppets just laying around, and the idea that, like, Carol would put his stuff down, pick it up, and straighten out Ernie or Bert or whatever that had been left there, because these are not puppets for a show. This isn't Jeff Dunham being a, you know, racist. Yeah. These are characters, and that's why you and I were kind of about the new Kermit, because he just, there's something, you know, it's interesting to watch The Simpsons for 30 years, because Homer's sounded more like Walter Matthau and now sounds more like Grandpa, but that's just because the actor who's playing him is 30 years older.
Yeah, no, precisely. And I'm, because this actually happened last year, was the fact that the voice of Kermit got switched. And honestly, I'm not a fan of the new Kermit, like the new voice. I mean, because the old Kermit was the one that was on the show, and I feel like Steve Whitmire, right. Okay, had a very sardonic Kermit.
Yeah.
And I think, but he at least sounded like Kermit. The new Kermit may be more Kermit-like than what we're used to, but he doesn't sound right. At least,
yeah, the
yet.
New one is Matt Vogel. And I don't know. Like, it's interesting because in The Muppets, he's like two whiskeys into a sadness.
Yeah.
But he has that same Kermit warmth to his voice.
I do love – the early season was better. I think one of my favorites was – when Fozzie goes, Kermit, have you ever been tranked before? He's like, well, I licked my cousin once and the room started melting.
Yeah, this is also a Disney thing, because they really haven't released Gravity Falls in full yet either. But like, I just hope that show comes out, because there was something very charming about it.
There was.
Even though I don't think I go as far as some of their biggest opponents, but there is something very charming about the Muppets whenever they're on screen. Like, when Kermit goes, I hate when Piggy's mad at me. I say a prayer every time I start my car. Like, there's just, There's something so amazing about that line.
There was something very enjoyable about making them, like, taking them back. The goal was, in some degree, to take them back to the Muppet Show, where it's backstage, but it's even more backstage than just while the show's going. It's getting the show up and running.
And it's just, it works for me. You needed someone like a Scott Adsit or someone to play like a Lorne Michaels role, because Kermit is not that role. I mean, that was what Muppets Tonight was, kind of like. He had a different host, but he was supposed to be the producer. He's just not that guy. Like, I like it when Scooter's on the verge of a meltdown, like an utter to God.
That was honestly, like, the biggest part is that Scooter just wasn't there. Yeah. Like, he wasn't big enough for, you know, Scooter having a version of a breakdown, I agree, is what makes it, is he's just, like, freaking out that the show isn't going to work. Or Rizzo. I think Rizzo became, I don't know, like, very weird, like, almost like, you know, the guy who knows a guy who knows a guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, and that goes back to the levity from Muppet Christmas Carol, which is that he's not a muse, but he's just like, he's Charles Dickens' drinking buddy, that he just comes along and they're like, hey, this really works. Let's just keep doing that. Like, no, don't keep doing that. Just because a joke works, you can't keep running with it.
Well, and I think that's actually a good point for the show, is that Gonzo kind of got lost a little bit.
Yeah, Gonzo was the great. I don't know.
Something I wanted to bring up is, you said Jeff Dunham, and I was going to bring up ventriloquists. It's just in general, is one of the things that it allows you to do is, in it, this is in the Muppets are very similar, and not in telling racist jokes, but yeah. Is more that there is a separation between the puppeteer and the puppet,
right?
In where the joke comes from. You know, that it's not that the Muppets are getting away with jokes that people couldn't. That separation allows it for it to be a separate joke that might not work the same way from a standard comedian.
Yeah, and it's amazing how rare that is, actually, because Charlie McCarthy was the biggest thing on the planet, and no one could do Charlie McCarthy again. You know, I mean, it's true. I mean, and for those of you who don't know, he's a very famous ventriloquist puppet that, if you don't know, you've seen him, because he always has a top hat and a monocle and a tuxedo, and he played the fancy boy. Like, that's always who he was.
I mean, I think one of the ones that David and I watched growing up, my grandfather had recorded it for us when we were coming to visit, and
sure,
gave it to us, was Ron Lucas.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. Like, and he had, I mean, he'd go all the way down to a sock puppet, yeah, and then he'd take the sock off and he goes, I am a naked puppet. And and it's something wonderful like that, to a baseline. Like, the whole medium in general is, I think it's something special when it's done right. Like, but it has to be done right, which is why I think Crank Yankers is exceptionally stupid.
Yeah.
But, Avenue Q. Heck, Avenue Q, the whole show runs around. You see the puppeteers.
Yeah.
They're standing right there. They are not ventriloquists. They are running around with the puppet. And after a certain point, you forget that the puppeteer is even there.
Right. But to your point, that doesn't work unless the show's good.
Agreed. No.
Right. Because, yeah, like, there's an amazing movie that came out last year called Becoming Vincent or Finding Vincent, which is a story about Vincent Van Gogh, and he's murdered. The reason I bring it up is it's an artistic masterpiece. Every single frame was painted, if you haven't seen it. The thing is, that's beautiful, but after half an hour, you get it, and it still has to be a movie. Yeah. And the movie overall is, you know, a B movie. The effect is incredible, and it took like 5 years to make, but that's kind of the point. If you're a performer, if you're a character, that works. If you're just not doing it, and that's your Crank Yankers reference, there's a lot of things that go that far.
And I think it's something wonderful that why, like, for me, and I believe for you, the Muppets Christmas Carol is my favorite rendition of a Christmas Carol.
Sure.
The Christmas Carol story has been done literally to death.
Yeah.
it's been done in almost every major TV show. It has so many different movies, so many different holiday specials. I mean, down to a Bill Murray Scrooge, which I find entirely entertaining as well.
Sure.
But honestly, my favorite rendition of A Christmas Carol, to going back to its truest roots, is the Muppets doing it. Right. And Michael Caine. Michael Caine as Scrooge. And it's wonderfully done and it fits. And you've got Kermit as Bob Cratchit and these characters play those characters, and you're sitting there going, this is completely believable. I sit through this and I know that's a Muppet, but to me it's still the character of, you know, Kermit's just an actor.
Right. And you know, and Robin playing Tiny Tim. You know, and again, I think it's also a well-made movie because it could have also been terrible. But the idea that Gonzo is the narrator playing literally Charlie Dickens, as he's called, Rizzo is there for comic relief, that they, I don't want to say they clean it up because it's still a Christmas Carol. But they make it bleak. Like it's honestly still like, that's the one thing Muppets can do. They can be very dark.
Yeah. Like it still goes for the full third, the third ghost, and it's terrifying. No. You genuinely sitting there going, oh my goodness. And you know, you're like, and I think having a more underrated actor as Michael Caine to do it. I mean, he was at the time and now is much more appreciated for his body of work, but
sure,
pulled it off wonderfully. And still, it's the only movie he's ever sang in.
It is.
The joke is like, I wish it'd be a movie you'd like sing in or something. It's like, I did. With the Muppets.
With the Muppets.
Watch it.
Well, and it's also one of these things, too, where he treats them like other actors. You know, yes. And they're other humans, and they're other Muppets, and it doesn't matter what's what. They're all the same. And it's really interesting to see him interact with Bob Cratchit, because you don't – I mean, you know, if you're watching a Muppet thing, you're never convinced you've seen someone using the strings, so to say. But there's a difference in size and proportion, of course. The costuming, though, is just as good on any of the Muppets as anyone else. It's like, it's interesting to see how you treat them, because I imagine Michael Caine thought Kermit more than an actor than some of the characters he's worked with in the past, frankly. but it's interesting to see him, you know, when he goes, I wonder how the staff would be in the unemployment line, and his voice is cracking, and they're all, and it's room for a stupid Muppet joke, which I think is the worst joke in the movie. But at the same time, there's this kind of air of feeling around it that Michael Caine is actually yelling at another actor who's dealing with that other actor.
No, and exceptionally. And I completely agree. And I think there's something wonderful to that. And actually, it was really cool. I actually, one of the people who was the costume designer for that was at my wedding, which is just, like I said, we'll see it every time we watch that movie. We'll let the credits roll just because her name will pop up.
That's awesome.
And it's so well done. It's something Brian Henson did very well. It's one of those things I'm actually very, and I say this and it's, and it takes us down another tangent, but we'll move forward to Glove and Boots, is that honestly, I think, you know, Jim Henson died too young, because if he'd stuck around, I think CGI wouldn't be as much as what it is.
Sure.
I feel like Henson Studios puppetry did so. I mean, just going back to Farscape with Brian Henson, the puppets in that are absolutely wonderful. It becomes a very silly show around season three and a half, you know, midway through season three. But you wouldn't know it for the, you know, the costume design and such as that.
Yeah. And I don't know where it all fits together here. I mean, I'll be honest, I like Jim Henson. He died for a stupid reason. So, yeah.
Yeah, sepsis is a really...
Well, but it's also he didn't get a sore throat and looked at.
Yeah.
I mean, like... I mean, it's a mixture of his religion, which he didn't even follow anymore, and the fact that he was too busy to see a doctor. See a fucking doctor, guys. I'm sorry.
Yes, no, that is the only takeaway from this is if you have a sore throat that doesn't go away or anything that doesn't go away with a certain amount of time, see a damn doctor.
If it's not healing, see a doctor. But, I mean, the thing about it is, it's interesting because he outlives his legacy, which makes him kind of immortal.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and there's also problems with that, too.
Here's one. And I pray that used to be MGM Studios, now Hollywood Studios, the Disney World park. I hope that, and if they do, I will find a way to get myself a pirated copy. And Disney, you may hunt me down. I do not care.
Sure.
The Muppets 3D show, I watch it every time.
Oh,
I
yeah, go to of course. Orlando. Me too.
I have to. Like, I will get in line. I will watch it because it's. And I will call it out every time because Sweetums should not be out in the crowd and up on this and behind the wall that's blown up at the same time. But that's fine. I'll let that one go. But I love it. It's just enjoyably cheesy. It is the perfect personification of what I think of the Muppets.
And it was the last thing he directed.
I completely believe that too.
Well, and it's one of these things too. Like, it also could have been more had there not been fighting with his estate. Like, because it was almost a whole world. Like, the idea that you could have gone to Rizzo's Pizzeria and they would have brought out the pies and the little animatronic rats and et cetera. Like, but it's interesting because I love that when you enter that part of the park, it looks run down like everything else the Muppets ever have done.
It does. It looks like they're on a shoestring budget. It looks like everything's about to blow up because, you know, Bunsen and Beaker are about to destroy something. What I hope is that what will bring us forward is that, you know, there's a YouTube show, and if I can get a hold of them and get them on, I would love to have them on, but no. I hold no hope of that.
Yeah,
but I will try. There's a YouTube show called Glove and Boots, and I found it over 6 years ago. Somebody showed me the evolution of the hipster. And I think very shortly thereafter, I burned through the entire series and had just watched as it came out slowly ever since. And I know I showed it to you a couple years ago, and
sure,
you actually got to watch it with your daughter, and she loves it just as much. And it's wonderful because it is a show that could have just as easily gone very dark or dirty or something like that, but managed to it makes some off-color jokes, but it manages to almost be a follow-up, you know, to that style, like hearkening to the Muppets to a degree, but with its own brand of silliness and, you know, kind of they mug for the camera. And one of them is obviously an off the rack, you know, beaver. And, yeah, you know, the other one, like,
is a Sesame Street reject.
Is a Sesame Street reject, like, right, some of the ones I've made. But what I love as the show goes on is you realize that these are whoever's making them, that the team or the guys that are making it are exceptional puppeteers. Yeah. Because, like, the volume that they hit to. But
yeah, so the show was, I believe, like, they were buskers in subways in New York. And it was Damien Eckhart Jacoby, and Vincent Bova. And, like, they were just dudes, you know, again, they were performing for change. And they found this kind of weird niche. And if you watch the old stuff, you know, the red guy, Mario, doesn't have his voice down yet. I mean, Fafa is just doing kind of a nasally Brooklyn accent is what he's doing.
Oh, you hear that the main, like, one of their buddies or one of the guys who is a voice, and he's got... Like when the frog, the uncle, who is the Brooklyn guy, and that is his voice. Like the guy, yeah, who's doing the voice, it is his voice, and it is the most quintessential Brooklyn accent you will ever hear.
It sounds like he stopped off at like a Staten Island dumpster somewhere. Like it's really fantastic because he appears on the show in other ways at other times.
He was on an ESPN special for the Super Bowl.
And it's just cranked up just enough so it sounds like he's really, hey, buddy. Yeah. It's really good.
I can't do it justice, but that was pretty good.
Johnny D.
Johnny D.
Yeah, and I mean, he's wearing a tracksuit, for Christ's sake. and a big crucifix necklace.
It's such a horrible stereotype, but I've seen it so much.
But you know, it was inspired by them shoving, like, that very guy shoving someone off a sidewalk, and he's like, oh, that's our next guy.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, you bring him, them up, Glove and Boots. Glove and Boots. Because, obviously, they got screwed over by the new YouTube policies. But they even have that Muppet vibe of being on a shoestring the whole time and about to fail, and they got shoved out by YouTube, which is the ultimate irony.
It is the ultimate irony. And, like, but, I mean, and I've seen pictures of their sets and such. I mean, they're very, you know, simple put together, but I mean, as they went along, they got really good at what they did. It's very surprising, and I do hope, honestly, they come back, because I think for present standards, unless the Muppets get another redux, I think they're...
I'd rather they have another movie. I mean...
I agree.
To me, like, even with a lot of the shows I like Arrested Development... These last few seasons have just felt so forced and squeezed out. Do a movie. Like, it's a shorter shoot, and you have to actually nail down your ideas. I'd rather have a third Muppet movie. I didn't really like Muppets Most Wanted, but it was better than parts of that new show, which clearly no one liked anyway. Like,
no, I mean, I enjoyed watching the show, because I'll take the Muppets where I can get them.
A weekly Muppets is a nice fix to have.
It is a nice fix to have. And, but I will say, what I think saddened me about that show was that it had decent chemistry, but it, and I sent this to you and I will include this in the show notes, is I stumbled upon a while back a camera test of sure. Fozzie and Kermit in a tree for the original Muppet movie. And it's Frank Oz and Jim Henson just riffing.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most wonderful things I've ever seen.
Well, it's like the original Bert and Ernie bits where they're just talking, because like they had two distinct personalities with this. It's like you and I talking in character ish, right? Like, cause like there are people who get along, they have points of view, they're kind of funny, and that's all they're doing. It's just through a bear and a frog. But I mean, it's like a bear in his natural habitat,
a Studebaker.
Like, it's just, none of the lines make sense, but they make sense to them, and they say it with such commitment. You know, it's like the example I thought of was that Fairley Brothers movie a few years ago called The Three Stooges. No one knew what it was going to be. They hated it outright, but if you watch it, it's just kind of a B-minus Three Stooges movie. No one expected them to actually just do a straight Three Stooges movie. They expected it to be about how the Stooges made their first show. That's not what it is. If there's another Muppet movie, I just hope it's another movie starring the Muppets.
But that's all I need.
That's all I need. It's exactly right. It's a shame when they do The Wizard of Oz or Treasure Island, because it's something that's been done before, but it's still the fucking Muppets.
No, it is. And it's something I've come to appreciate, even going back to like the Gonzo, like Muppets in Space, or the Muppets from, like, you know, it's low on the tier for my Muppet movie fix, but...
It's still something.
It's still something.
I mean, the one I want to revisit soon, whether for you and I or for my daughter, is Follow That Bird, which is kind of the Sesame Street Muppets do the first Muppet movie. Because Big Bird, I think, gets adopted but wants to go back to Sesame Street, so she road trips back, or he road trips back. That's kind of it. It's just the Muppet movie road trip movie.
I mean, I still love in the Muppets when they pass by Big Bird, you're like, I'm headed to New York City to make my way into public broadcasting.
He's like, they're just like, ooh, it's a collar grab joke, man. Like, it's the best. Oh, man. Anyway, we're at 45 minutes talking about the Muppet.
I didn't even expect to make it this far, but I should have known better. But
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Okay, so first of all, you guys, well, recommend one for them for the Glove and Boots.
Oh, Glove and Boots. I would either say The Evolution of TV or the Wolverine musical.
Wolverine musical is a masterpiece. I almost recommended that myself, but since you did, and the one he mentioned earlier was The Evolution of the Hipster, which is the one he showed me. There's a great one they do with a Canadian astronaut who came back to Earth. The Canadian astronaut was the guy who had been in space the longest as a non-Russian, I believe.
Yes.
And when he came back, he sang Major Tom, Ground Control to Major Tom, the David Bowie song. And they do it. Fafa is up in there with him. And then it turns into Rocket Man halfway through. And Mario is so pissed off, he walks off. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
And then just for giggles, you need to watch at least one product testing. It doesn't matter which one. I think the food testing one might be their
best.
The
Rollo, yeah.
The one where they make the sushi bazooka.
The sushi bazooka. That's right. Oh,
But I mean, any of them are just fine. Yeah. They're just fine and dandy. The like egg sour one, candy.
The egg, yeah.
But we've also on Myopia already done Muppet Treasure Island to find. And like I said, in December, Thomas is hosting. We have the hosts are floating through. He is leading. He's curating a Muppet month in December. So stay tuned for that.
Thank you. This has been another episode of the Geekly Oddcast, and we had Nick Hoffman of Myopia.
That's me.
of Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Please give it a check out, and thank you and good night.
This has been the Geekly Oddcast, and if you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you really like us, be sure to leave us a review, because it really helps out. The Geekly Oddcast will return in 2 weeks. Otter Worlds, which would ordinarily be next week, is still on hiatus, but will be back in 3 weeks. This is just one of those things that happen when events conspire and computers are damaged. So thank you for bearing with us. In the meantime, you can fill that void we've left in your life by checking out some of the other ESO Network podcasts. Like this one.
You ever been curious about the real or fictional worlds?
In the beginning, there were laser kings and giant robots.
Those who create.
I'm going to feed you to this tentacle monster now. No.
Or what inspires.
And I remember being in my room with my brother, and we immediately, like within 5 seconds, he decided he was a DC fan and I decided I was a Marvel fan. And we were going through and sorting out all of the comics.
And you might enjoy Hubie Tigers, the only podcast show where we take life by the tail. Now available on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes, and of course your favorite podcasting app. This is Hubie Tigers.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.